It's a passion of mine to inspire and encourage others to achieve their God-given greatness. I hope to share a fresh and energetic perspective of life with you, because everybody needs a little Jesus, joy, and Jen in their day. Well, hello and welcome to another episode of JMAR Solutions. I have the solutions to your problem, maybe. I have an awesome guest on today, and his name is James Lee. We met at Mastermind in Frisco, Texas, which is an awesome place to live. And he's already on the line. He's sitting here staring at me. He's a mental performance coach, and which really, really excites me because I'm so into that. And we're going to have such a, this is going to be one of my favorite podcasts probably ever. Because I want to jump into his mind, and I want to just like all the things that he's accomplished and done. We're going to talk about and where he's at right now and where he's headed. He has his own brand, and it's Unleash the Athlete, which is such an amazing, I just love that. It's just like so powerful and encouraging. Just the name is just incredible. Unleash the Athlete. But anyway, he's on. So go ahead and say hi to everyone.
Hello, everybody. That's a great intro. Fantastic.
It's just, okay, here's the thing, James. My brother's name is James, by the way. I forgot to tell you that. We talked for a little bit before.
I like him already.
Yes, yes. And my father's name is Jim. So we're real creative in our family. My husband's name is Toby, and so is my son. So we're real creative with our names.
When I was young, my father brought me in. I was like 12, and he said, I need to ask you a very serious question. And his name's James Michael Leith the first, and I'm the second. He goes, and I thought I was in trouble. He goes, will you promise me to name your first son James Michael Leith the third? I was like, yes, I will. So on my quest for a wife, they're going to have to understand that our first boy is going to be James Michael Leith the third.
Your wife will love that.
Good.
Will love that. Good. She will not have a problem with it because she loves you. We're speaking that into existence because you're not married.
Speaking into existence.
Yes. Right. And so we'll find you a good Texas girl. But anyways, I appreciate you so much coming on here, finding the time. I know you're so busy. And right now, let's go ahead and hop into what you're doing right now and how you got into what you're doing, if you don't mind. Can we start there? Because I think that's super, like, I know there's a lot of people that wish they could be in the situation that you're in. So explain where you're at.
It's a fun story. I got my communication degree at Fresno State and then hopped into the corporate world and was kind of coaching on the side, youth sports. And then I coached at the high school level. And then I was strength coaching at the college level. And something in me was like not fulfilled when I was coaching. I loved being with the kids. My favorite coaching was sixth grade girls basketball. It was just the best age and the best sport, and it was just so much fun. And some coach invited me to go and kind of audit his practice. And he asked me to kind of watch it and give him some pointers. And it was in that moment afterwards when we were talking about his practice that I realized I didn't actually like coaching. Not all of coaching. I just didn't like the strategy.
Right. The X's and O's.
What are we going to do on game day? I'm like, I don't care. Like, let's hang out in the locker room. Like, I want to talk about the bus ride. I want to talk about culture. I want to talk about opportunities during practice to teach leadership and to kind of help them be mentally resilient. And how do we include character into this playbook? And I thought there's got to be something out there that can help coaches do that. And I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find a curriculum that could be merged with the playbook. Because a lot of coaches will think that if I'm going to bring in a mental resiliency coach or a leadership coach, it's got to be an addition to the playbook. And when you're coaching youth sports, which you've coached youth sports, your kids have grown through that, there's not a whole lot. You get maybe 2 hours a week with these kids. And it's like, wait a minute, 2 hours, I got to teach them how to all the formations, and I got to do this playbook, and then and you also want me to talk about integrity? Like, there's no time, coach.
Yeah.
And so, long story short, I figured out how to teach leadership skills, teach mental resiliency skills, but make it a part of teaching the strategy because I loved the strategy. I loved the locker room, the bus rides. I didn't care about the strategy.
The relationships. So, yeah.
It's all, yeah, the culture. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was playing sports, my favorite parts weren't necessarily getting, I mean, I loved getting an interception, hitting a three-pointer,
yeah,
getting on base. Like, I loved all that stuff. And those days are gone when an athlete can do all three of those things in one year, right?
Yeah.
But it came down to when I was in high school, my dad said, you can either have a job or be on a team. Mm-hmm. So I just went from sport to sport to sport. I wasn't good at basketball, but I was on it. I wasn't good at wrestling, but it made me a better football player, better yep. running back, you know? Volleyball, I made that by the skin of my teeth and just by effort. I was terrible at volleyball, but I still made the team. And so I learned through all those experiences that the actual playbook wasn't as important as the players. So what I do now with Unleash the Athlete is I teach coaches and I educate administrators and parents how to give the game back to their kids by using sports to actually teach leadership.
Yeah.
They're using sports to teach character and mental resiliency. And it's funny. A lot of times I'll get a parent who says, I want you to teach my kid to be more mentally tough. And then I'll ask him, well, let's just replay the last 10 minutes of life. I saw you get out of the car, grab your player's bag, walk with your player to the dugout, hang up his bag, pull out a bat for him, and then hand him the bat. First of all, what are you doing in the dugout?
Yeah.
Get out of the dugout. It's the kid's sport. And then, and this is an actual story that happened last year. 20 minutes later, this kid, he's at shortstop and he misses the ball. And his dad's like, come on, be more tough. And I'm like, you've ruined him. There's no way he can be tough. He's never done anything hard in his life.
Yeah.
You know? And so then I look back on my past and I'm like, okay, when I played baseball, I had a paper out because my dad said I'd pay for half of anything you want. And I needed new cleats. Mm-hmm. So I needed $30 in order to buy the $60 cleats, the Nikes, instead of the Kenny shoes, yeah, you know, knockoffs. I wanted the real ones. And so I had to work for them. But because I worked for those shoes,
exactly,
I never forgot them. Mm-hmm. I paid for them. And so when with mental resiliency, when we talk specifically about parents, is we've taken away their ability to become resilient by putting a pillow underneath them. And so coaches have this 1 hour opportunity every day or so to teach mental resiliency. It's dang near impossible.
Right.
And so I've come up with a couple strategies to be able to do that. And that's how I spend most of my time.
It's so true. Cause I'm a parent and my daughter's 21, made it through all, you know, high school playing, junior high, all that. Right. And then
like you said, made it through,
It
was probably very difficult.
So the more, I think the more gifted an athlete is, the more adversity they hit. And what I think is sad is some of those parents these days, especially living in Texas and being in this area that we live in, they have more, so they can give more. And I don't always think that's the right thing. Okay. So what I'm saying is like you said, gone are the days that kids can play all three sports, you know, in high school or whatever. Because they're playing select and all that. They're giving their kids, they're doing it from a place of love. They want to help them. Right. But what they don't realize is they're actually hurting them because they're fighting their battles for them. They're not letting them feel pain. They're not letting, that's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And that was my biggest deal with my own kids is, you know, especially with my daughter, because she was one of those kids that was really young for her age group. So she turned the age turned 14, like right before school started, you know, her high school year. And she was the starting setter. So 14 years old, most kids are in eighth grade, you know, and she's on the varsity starting. And she had to deal with a lot of jealousy. Okay. Because there were seniors and junior, you know, people that were 16, 17, 18 that were like, who are you? You know? And I never saved her from that. You know, and it was hard though to watch. It was hard. And I never went to the coach and said, it's not fair the way these girls are treating her. I said, if this is the position that you want and you know, athletically you're able to do it, but now you need to become mentally tough. Like, you know, you need to do this. You go to the coach, you go to those girls, you stand your ground, you fight for yourself. And that was the best thing I ever did for her. And I think a lot of parents miss that.
Absolutely.
They want to come in. It's coming from a good place. They don't know. They don't realize that they're hurting their kid because they think they're helping them, right?
And well, so, it's also motivated by wanting to be liked by your kid.
Yes. Oh,
and
I can't.
So you want your kid, right? But you want your kid to be like, look, I got your back. I'm fighting for you. But then they go out into the real world and they're like, I've got all this experience because I played sports and every team and everything. And then they get a boss who was promoted 3 levels above their capacity to actually lead. And so they're just some big bully. They've never had to deal with this kind of adversity before. Mm-hmm. So they crumble.
Yeah.
And it really hurts them later on in life if they're not able to figure out, how do I traverse these waters? Mm-hmm. How do I get around? Like, how do I fight my own battles?
Right.
I would have this, my parent meeting, because I still coach, my first parent meeting, I let them know, I will never speak to you about playing time without your child standing right there.
Right.
And they will ask the questions. If your kid is sick or if they have to miss practice, they are excused if they call me.
Right.
I don't care what it is. I can't find my shoes. Have them call me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the kid doesn't want to lie to coach. Mm-hmm. And so, but what I teach coaches and what I do myself is I use those opportunities to teach how to talk to an adult on the phone.
Yeah.
So Sarah calls me up and she's really struggling to talk. And I use this as a moment. I'm like, all right, Sarah, so I want you to hang up and then call me again. Let's try this again. And it's a train wreck. But what she sees is that, like, I'm working with her, mm-hmm. and that the coaching hasn't ended. It's not a practice, but it's on the phone. And so now she's not afraid to call an adult.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great skill to have, because now you don't agree with a grade you had on your paper. You don't have mom call. Go talk to the teacher.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the teacher's going to tell you, oh, great, thanks for talking to me and not calling your mom to talk to me. Let's deal with this.
Yeah.
And so these lessons that you're teaching, because you're the coach and you're the most influential person in that kid's life at that moment, you know, Billy Graham talks about that, right? And so you create these moments where these kids are able to kind of peek into adulthood, mm-hmm. kind of pull the curtain back, like in The Wizard of Oz, like, it's just a creepy old man behind the curtain who's scared as you are to talk on the phone.
Right.
So let's do this. But it's those little tiny moments that's what the kid remembers.
Mm-hmm.
Not what the score was in the championship game, not where you went to pizza afterwards. It's these little tiny moments where coach showed me that he cares about me.
Yep. And let me tell you, when I interviewed my son's coach, and my son's in a senior year at playing football. And we were talking about parent involvement at the high school level. Now, he goes to 5A school here in Texas, so it's basically a religion, as you know. You know, football here is like it's like no other. Like your colleges don't have, or universities don't have the facilities and, you know, prestige that they have in high school here. And if you're at 5 and 6A level, you're playing pretty much, you're playing against D1 athletes. You know, it's a lot, right?
Right.
And so I was talking to him and I said, you know, my son's junior year, we transferred him to this school that he's at right now. So last year was really tough because he took a senior's position and all the seniors hated him. And it was really, 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 really hard. They were like hard on him the entire season. It was very tough. So I was asking the coach, I was like, when my son would come, did you know how bad it was? He goes, I knew it was bad. I didn't know how bad it was. I wish you had said. That's what he says to me, right? Have I lost you on my story yet? Because I tend to go all over the place. So he said,
See, I played football, so I understand all of this. I was pulled up as a freshman to play at the higher level. So, like, I get this. Yeah.
Yes, and you get – it's hard. It's rough, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like – anyway, so I said, did you ever hear from me? And he was like, no. I said, did my husband ever come in this office? And he was like, no. I said – He goes, why didn't y'all? I said, what did you ever see my son? He goes, yes, we had several meetings. I said, that's why. And then he said to me, he said, you know, those senior parents were coming into my office every week going, you know, why aren't you playing my son? Da-da, who's this new kid? Blah, blah, blah. Right. And so he's getting hated on by adults now too. Right. And so they're feeding the narrative to their sons. Like, well, you deserve this type attitude. And he said to me, you know, though, those boys that you know that I that were doing all that, they had offers to go play, and none of them could once that adversity hit, stuck yeah. with it. He said
they were handicapped by their parents right. protecting them.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. And he said, your son's the kind of kid that's going to, because every freshman goes through it at that, you know, at the next level when you're in college, that's going to be able to go, I recognize this. I know how to deal with it and I know how to manage mm-hmm. it. And he said, and that's the difference. And so I was like, that was, but I'll tell you, James, I was bawling at night for my son. I was crying and praying to God because he loves this so much. And it was so painful to watch. And that, I think, when we try and save our kids, we're obviously hurting them. You know, there's some situations, I will say there are some situations where you do have to step in where it's abusive there. And I've been through that one time with my daughter. Okay. Right. So not every situation do you handle this way, but just the majority, you want to try and empower your kid. And that's what you're teaching, right? Which I appreciate.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you. And I want to applaud you for not avoiding your pain. But and let him enjoy the pain. Mm-hmm. When I say enjoy, it's an investment into the future.
Right.
Because the pain was hard. And when you said, okay, sometimes you go too far. Now let's talk about bullying. Like if there's no bullying, there's no Steve Jobs. There's no Bill Gates.
Yep.
There's no a lot of leaders. You know, there's no a lot of people.
Yeah, right? There's like, a lot of people.
Yeah, like even Tony Robbins was bullied when he was young because hadn't grown yet, you know? And so his mom beat him and poured soap down his throat. And so we want to take away bullying. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, there's some bullying that kind of motivates you. Mm-hmm. And when you're a young kid, you're a freshman or a sophomore and you're coming in and all of a sudden you're starting, like your daughter was the starting center, well, she's going to get picked on. And that's jealousy. Where it comes a problem is now when they like start slashing their tires and stuff,
right.
like, you know, talking about her online. Like, okay, there's a limit.
Right.
But we at the bullying doesn't stop with kids.
Right.
We're in a bully culture.
I agree.
We've got bullies at the highest level of government. Mm-hmm. We've got bullies at church. We've got bullies, and the other thing is we have teachers who are bullies too. Mm-hmm. But I look back and some of the bully coaches that I thought were bullies at the time were the best coaches I had.
Yeah.
Because they were just like, that's not good enough.
Right.
You need to do better. Like, why aren't you yelling at anybody else? Because they don't have the potential you have.
Well, let me tell you something else. Oh,
this isn't fair. But I remember as a kid being like, it's not fair. And the coaches were like, yeah, I know. Let me tell you a quick story. So this story changed my life. I was a seventh grade flag football player, and I played flag football for my school, and then our school joined a bunch of other schools for like Pop Warner. And it was Wednesday, and I didn't do my homework. And my coach came up to me. He was like, Jimmy, you're not playing on Friday. And I'm like, Coach, I have to play on Friday. He goes, why? I go, because we're playing Avila, and they're the best team in the league. He goes, yeah, we are. I go, and I was super arrogant.
Yeah.
If I don't play, we're not going to win. He goes, you're probably right. And I was like, oh, well, just do something. He goes, you didn't do your homework. That was your decision. You're not playing. And I was like, okay. So we get to the game on Friday. I'm on the sideline, and I'm given no responsibilities. I can't help at all. And we lose. And as I'm picking up the cones, I look over at coach, and I'm like, hey, coach, should have let me play. He goes, look, I don't want you to be – misled. You are 100% the reason we lost today. It is your fault because you didn't do your homework. So don't let that ever happen again. I never missed another sports event the rest of my career because the consequence was there. He fulfilled it at the cost of a loss. And I think these days, if he would have told me that, he would have got fired. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you mean you're going to blame my kid for losing? It's like, it was my fault. I was at a small school,
right.
And it makes it easier to be the best athlete around. And in retrospect, I happen to be pretty talented. I peaked at eighth grade. That was when I peaked, you know, seventh grade, I was still pretty good. But because he followed through on that, that's how, that's the adversity I had to overcome. Mm-hmm.
And made so you amazing.
I made a decision. Mm-hmm. And I told my dad about it. He was like, you didn't do your homework. End of discussion. There's no calling Mr. Gabriel and being like, hey, can you make that? I donated $5,000 to your program. Yeah. None of that stuff. My dad was just like, nope, you didn't do your homework. Get me another course.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That was it. It was the end of the discussion.
I know. And that's why you're going to be working for the Bills, the Bulls, not the Bills, the Bulls. You know, it starts with a B. It's all the
same. No Bills. Buffalo. But I'll be in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, you don't get to the level that you're at without adversity and dealing with it and not running from it. That's such a great story because that's the reason why we had to transfer our son. He was on a team where we loved this certain coach and then he left. And the one that replaced him was one of those coaches that's like, I believe in first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth chances. And like one of those. And when we were listening to his speech, my husband looked at me and he was like, nope, this is not going to be good. And the season, my son's sophomore season, was we did not let him play varsity. And it was very difficult for him because the coaches were calling our house wanting him to play. And we were like, no, because we knew then we were like, we're taking and here with the UIL rules, you don't want to, when you play varsity, it's harder to transfer and all that kind of stuff. So we kept him on JV knowing because we knew the particular kids that were in this group were so talented that they did whatever they wanted. Do you understand?
Well, also he would sit the bench.
Yeah.
But be on varsity.
Well,
so you gave him an extra season. Well, maybe he would have earned his way up there, but he has another year to hone his skills.
His group was really talented. They all were.
Yeah.
His sophomore group, that's pretty much who all played the varsity that year. But anyways, we saw what was going on, and they didn't win games. They had all this talent, and they didn't win games because the coach never held accountability. And my husband and I were like, no, this is not healthy. This, like, kids were, like, throwing punches and telling coaches to F off. And still starting the next game. And my husband and I were like, no, because it's not about winning and losing. It's about the character, right? And what are you teaching the boys in the long run? And so that's why we had to leave that environment because the culture, like you said, was just so unhealthy. But we knew that when we saw that happening because they didn't hold accountability. I mean, like, it's insane. What happened with you in seventh grade taught you life lessons that got you to where you're at today. It's so important to teach those things and to hold accountability.
Yeah. Well, so there's that also. As a seventh grade flag football coach, he's not held accountable to wins. And a high school football coach often is.
Yes.
And so as a culture, we love to vilify a coach when they don't do what we want them to do, but we also have to remember that if they get fired, that they may have to move their family to a different city or maybe a different state because they didn't win.
Right.
And so we have to be very careful, and we just have to be very careful not to be like, that coach was just wrong. It was like, well, wait a minute. Maybe the administration was like, look, do whatever you can to win. We got your back.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what the administration is, well, they're not holding the coach accountable. And so sometimes you have to go further than from that coach.
Right.
Other times I worked at a very high profile academy, sports academy. And
you can say it, IMG, you worked for IMG. You were their head. You're being what's the humble right now, but you were the head performance coach.
Head of leadership development.
That's huge for IMG. Yeah. Y'all, IMG is like the elite academy for athletes. If you don't know, if you're listening to this, you don't know. So that is huge.
Well, thank you. They had the number one football team, high school football team in the country. And some of the coaches were former athletes, but they weren't necessarily good coaches.
Right.
They were great athletes. They're fun people. But coaching is about 20% strategy. No coach ever got fired for not knowing strategy.
Yeah.
Coaches get fired for not being able to connect to the athletes.
Connection.
Not being able to be understood by the parents when the parents want to get them fired, right? And so your ability to connect with an athlete is paramount.
Mm-hmm.
It's when I told you earlier, I like sixth grade girls basketball. So this is one story, this girl named Cameron. She's the tallest girl on my team, and she won't shoot. And so third game goes by, and I pull her aside at practice. I go, why won't you shoot? I'm yelling from the bench, take a shot. And she's like, my former coach told me I wasn't allowed to shoot because I missed too much. And I almost was like, can you just tell me who that was? I'm going to go punch him in the throat and just tell me, right? She's like, he told me not to miss. And I go, Cameron, listen, not only do I want you to shoot, but I don't care if you miss.
Right.
I don't care if you miss the backboard, because how are you to get better?
Right.
I go, besides, you're getting all the rebounds. Mm-hmm. So she goes, are you kidding me? Like, really? I can shoot? And I go, I want you to shoot. And in fact, I'm going to tell the team to encourage you to shoot. So now she's held accountable. Now she has to shoot. So we get to that first game, and she gets the rebound, and she stops, and she looks at me, and I was like,
shoot the ball.
She misses the backboard, and he turns to look at me. I stand up, and I go, keep doing that.
Yeah.
She's running to the other side of the court. Well, anyways, she scored 9 points that game. Because when she finally did score, she kind of looks over at me while she's running to the other side of the court, and I'm on, and I'm like, you were bound to make it eventually. And then it changed everything. Her freshman year, she plays varsity. Like, it changed the course. But it was in that moment where I could just pull her aside and be like, we're not talking about strategy.
Right.
I'm giving you permission. I'm allowing you, whatever it is you want to say. But it's that ability to be able to get that athlete where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Not just paintbrush the whole team. I'm going to treat everybody the same and I'm going to do this. No, as a great coach gets their master's degree in each athlete and focuses on that. And their player handbook is bigger than their playbook.
Mm-hmm.
That they're focusing more on how can I reach this athlete instead of how can I use this athlete in this play.
Yep. Character is everything, and relationships and culture and all these things. This is so, so good. You know, that's what we actually did before transferring my son. We went and met with the coach, and that was my number one question was, do you hold kids accountable? Because we do in our home. Like, I was talking to one of our mastermind. I had him on as a guest last week. Anyways, we were talking about that. And I was telling him how I'm one of those moms that I'm crazy. You know, like there's like good mom, and then there's wacko, like crazy mom comes out whenever I'm like, when I get angry, you know, with the kids over my son. So I always tell him, I'm like, okay, because he was going to homecoming. And I said, so the rules in our home are, you know, we take your car, we take your phone, we take your life, we take your door, we take everything away from you. We will make your life a living hell in this home if you do something bad, if you do something wrong that you know is wrong. I said, most kids get this, they get a slap on the hand. I said, so what it does for him though, is it when he's hanging out with the boys and he's, you know, they're all trying to do that cool card, you know, thing. And they're going to do something. It gives him an out because he can say, you know what? My mom is crazy. She may be tiny, but she is mighty and she will ruin my life. And my father is standing behind her going, yep, take it all away, you know? And I like my car. I like my freedoms. I like my phone, you know, those kind of things. And it makes it easier for them to be hard on them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, I remember when my father was like, look, you get drunk at a party. This is in high school. He was an alcoholic, so he had different rules for me, right? He was a little more lax. He goes, you don't drive your car. Mm-hmm. Because if you get pulled over and the police take your Jeep away, I'm not going to pay to get it out.
Yep.
But you can call me and I'll gladly come pick you up, or I'll get you home somehow. So I tested it one night. It was like 12 o'clock and I had been drinking. I go, Dad, I need a ride home. He was like, give me the address. I'll be there in 20 minutes. He came and picked me up. And the next morning he's like, let's go get your Jeep. You know, thank you for not driving drunk.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was simple
because then it's gone. Like once it gets taken away, it's absolutely gone. He's like, I will not bail you out of that situation. You just won't have a car. And I live 13 miles from school, so I'm not getting a ride with friends. You know, and there's no Uber in the 90s.
No, there was not. That's awesome. So, okay, we you and I connect on that level, and I could talk to you all day long. I really could. I mean, like, I want to work with you. We got to do something together. How did you get to be a leadership or a thought leader or like a performance coach for a professional team like the Bulls? Like, how did you get there? Like, that's crazy. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. When I was younger, let's start. When I was a sophomore in high school, the person, the MC at the rallies got sick. And we had a rally on Friday. It was Thursday. And he's like, I can't do it. We need someone else to do it. And I just happened to be standing there. And I remember Mrs. Sparza was our leadership person. And she was like, who do you want to do it? And he looked over at me. He was like, I want Jim to do it. He's like, will you do it? And I was like, yeah, terrified. I'm a sophomore.
Yeah.
I'm going to lead the rally. Like, I'm going to be the guy on the microphone. Like, hi, everybody. But I was just arrogant and just confident enough to be like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And I remember that first time having a microphone and getting ready. And I remember just standing in the middle, just, you know how like when you speak, sometimes you just take it in, you're just looking around. And it's that, and then as you become a better speaker, you realize that you're actually gaining power from the audience by not starting right away. I don't know how I did that, but I did that day. And I was just like, this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a speaker. I need to figure out a message. Awesome. And so for the next 3 years, I was the MC. But because I was in so many different sports, I rode the bench a lot. Not in football. Football, I excelled. But like in the other sports, I rode the bench. And so I got to learn how the coach reacted and what the coach was saying. And I had good coaches. And I had bad coaches. Mm-hmm. Male coaches. And female coaches. And then my dream was to walk on at Fresno State and play football. I was so excited. So I walked on and then I limped off. Mm-hmm. I got hurt pretty bad. And the cheer team was like, we'll pay your scholarship if you decide to be the mascot. So I became the mascot at Fresno State University. Because I was an athlete, I talked to all the coaches and I was like, look, can I be in the huddle during basketball, during football? Like, and they were like, and I won't be messing around, but I just want to hear you and see how you talk to your athletes. And all of them were like, absolutely. Just don't get in the way. So here I am in this big goofy dog suit with a whoopee cushion tongue and a tail, and I've got pot belly, and I've got this like attitude. His name is Timeout. He's a big bulldog.
That's awesome.
And I'm sitting here and I'm learning how coaches speak. So I'm getting a master's education as an undergraduate because I'm just listening.
Yeah.
And I was the mascot when Derek Carr was at Fresno State. So he'd like scoot into the end zone and we'd chest bump and then he'd like walk me. I'd get on all fours. You know, like we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But once I got out of college and I started coaching, I realized I'm more of a coach's coach. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a resource. And how do I start doing that? And so it started with that one coach that asked me to come audit his practice and give him advice. I thought I was too young to do it, but he didn't think I was too young or too inexperienced. So I started doing that, and then I got my master's in performance psychology. And that opened up my eyes to this world of study, that of stuff that I had already learned because of going through all this adversity, like goal setting and vision training and imagery and all this other stuff. And I never knew that there was a body of study. So then when I started diving into those books, I thought, I'm just going to do this the rest of my life.
Yeah.
This sounds awesome. Well, youth sports doesn't pay very much.
No, it does not.
And so I had to set my sights higher. But I also knew that in order to get something really good, you have to pay a high price. And so I started doing things for free. I would strength coach out of high school for free. And I was a personal trainer like you for basically all my 20s. Mm-hmm. And so that paid the bills while I was able to go and take chances. You know, when you talk about IMG Academy, I was a teacher in San Luis Obispo, California. I was a college professor. I was teaching accounting. Was not supposed to be teaching that. Never took an accounting class in my life. But I was one chapter ahead of everybody else, and that's all that mattered.
That is so awful.
They had no idea. And I had no idea what I was teaching, but I knew it enough to fake it.
That's awesome.
And plus, they were paying a lot of money, so it made me want to work hard, right?
Yeah.
Well, in order to get that job, head of leadership development, IMG Academy, one of the biggest sports academies in the world, I had to quit my job and go to a conference at the chance to meet the hiring director. So I did that. I got up and I was here. I'm in Indianapolis right now. And so I came out to Indianapolis. I stayed with my buddy, Will, who I'm staying with right now. And I was like, all right, dude, like I need to meet this Taryn. I need to meet Taryn Morgan. That's what I got to do. So when I got there, I had met her. I met everybody else from IMG. I made a good impression. And at the end of the conference, I had an interview. But the reason I had an interview is because I started writing a blog 3 years prior. I was super active on social media, talking about sports psychology, talking about leadership. Mm-hmm. I had been on podcasts. I had been on YouTube channels. And so by the time I got to that interview, I had a body of work as a foundation. I had a master's degree. And so when I get these calls every couple of weeks or every week or so, I'm like, how do I do what you're doing? I'm like, you need to have started 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Because if I invite you on stage with me tomorrow, you're not ready.
Right.
Because you don't want to make mistakes at the highest level.
Yes.
When you start playing basketball, you don't want to be called by Jim Boylan and be like, come play with me tomorrow night in the NBA. No, you probably want to start in middle school. Mm-hmm. And you probably want to work your way through high school and AAU, and then you want to go to college and then spend a couple years maybe, you know, on the bench or in the G League and develop. And that way, when you come in, you don't make a complete fool of yourself
right
on the highest stage possible. But I learned that from John Maxwell. Mm-hmm. John Maxwell would be like, people would come up to him all the time. All the time they come up to him. How do I do what you do? He's like, well, let's go back 40 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you find a woman who is going to build you up and be the most important thing in your life. And then you go and get invited to be a part of the biggest Baptist organization and say, no, go to a failed church and make it huge. Or even to our pastor.
Yeah.
The pastor was tapped on the shoulder by Billy Graham. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go build a church in Frisco.
Yeah.
Like, and so how I got to being with the Bulls is I said yes to every opportunity I possibly could at the middle school level, at the high school level, at the college level. And I was happy where I was.
Yes.
Where I wasn't working with, I wasn't a strength coach for San Luis Obispo High School thinking if I could just get to Cal Poly.
Right.
And when I got to Cal Poly, I wasn't thinking if I could just be with the Niners, mm-hmm. you know, which is because of the area, it's an easy progression. And so being all in where you're at will lead to other opportunities.
I agree.
And it'll lead to more opportunities because you probably don't want to say yes to the first one mm-hmm. because the second one might be better or the ninth one might be better. So find something that you're good at the level you are right then, and then build from there instead of being like, Mr. Maxwell, Dr. Maxwell, can I speak with you tomorrow? It's like, and these days, you get on stage and fail, it could take you years to recover.
Yeah. Because that's all.
Or you can spend those years doing it, building up to that point.
People always remember the failures. It's crazy, you know?
And I've got huge failures out there, but I've got a lot of successes.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
I gave a presentation a couple of months ago that had I gotten the feedback I got from that presentation a few years ago, I may have quit and never done anything ever again. You know, but because I was seasoned, you know, mm-hmm. quote unquote seasoned, I was able to take that feedback and go, all right, well, my intention was different than how you received it.
Right.
So let me watch the tape, figure out why you think I said what you think I said. Watch the tape and realize I didn't say that. They heard that. How can I change it next time?
Right. That's awesome.
Right. But that only comes from experience.
Yeah.
That happens on your first speech. You're never getting up in front of anybody ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. True. It's okay to fail is what you're saying, you know, but when
it's a requirement
when you're
it's just okay.
I totally agree.
It's
I fail every day.
Necessity.
So, okay. So you're a believer. I'm going to go here with you because I'm a believer. I'm very bold about my faith only. I mean, mainly because I'm not a very good person. And so I need God. I need him in my life to make me a good person because it's just how it's how I roll. You know, nothing good happens unless he's in it. And so, but I've also taught and coached at public schools and at private, you know, where you have a little more freedom to teach your faith. How do you implement your faith without it being like too pressure on, like you have, you know, how do you implement that into your knowing how powerful our God is and how awesome he is and the principles and things that we know and from the kingdom mindset that we have, like the John Maxwell, you know, stuff, which is amazing. How do you implement that in a situation like the Bulls? Like, how do you take those same things and without offending people? How's that? Is that a good question?
Yeah. So I think people are offended when they get kind of blindsided by your faith. What I mean by that is, like, if you've created a relationship and you're doing this and all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'd like to talk to you about Jesus. You're like, wait a minute. I didn't know you're a Christian, or, you know, I didn't sign up for this, or they get really mad about it.
Okay.
So the way I go about it is, because it's not just religion, it's there's race, there's gender, there's background, there's so many different things. And so you know, where like I grew up in Fresno, California. That's not a big deal to anybody unless you grew up in Fresno. Then you're like, wait a minute, did you grow up north of Blackstone or south of Blackstone? And if you grew up in Fresno, that's a big deal. You know, what side of Shaw did you live on? But sometimes people are just like, oh, you're from California. Like, I worked, this is a total random story, but I was a karaoke host on a cruise ship for 9 months, which shouldn't shock you very much.
That is so random.
Long story short, I went on the cruise. I got into a competition, won the competition. They offered me a job and I said, why not? So I worked on a cruise ship.
That's awesome.
And my pastor at the time was like, this could be the dumbest thing that you've ever done. I was like, or it could be the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah.
And it really was. Because it turns out on a cruise ship, the only place you can get privacy is in the chapel. So I was in the chapel all day long, just reading my Bible. No one would ever bother me.
That's awesome.
So, but there was a reason why. Oh yeah. So when I was that karaoke host, I was the only guy from California. I was the only person from California. So they had very specific ideas about who I was. And so I could be like, yeah, you know, I am the surfer boy with three girlfriends and I surfed a class and all this other stuff. Or I can be like, oh, you know what? California is very diverse. So the way I start, let's bring it back. So the way I start a presentation with a team is I go, let's get some things out right now. I'm a 39-year-old white dude. So that's how I see the world. However, I've had a lot of interesting experiences that I'm going to try to share with you. Mm. I am a believer in Jesus Christ, but I'm not here to convert you.
That's good.
But I need you to know that I see the world through a rule book that I call the Bible. And that I'm not going to judge you for hating the Bible or hating a pastor when you grew up. Like, none of that stuff. I'm going to be as unbiased as possible. But again, I've lived this world as a white dude. Mm-hmm. California with a liberal education and a public education from America. So don't ask me geography questions because I don't know. I was born in America. They don't teach us anything about that, you know? And so that's how I usually would start with a team. I go, so that's just where I'm at. Now, I constantly read and try to meet with people in order to expand my horizons. I spend time in Switzerland, I spend time in Poland, I spend time in South America or South Africa, Mexico, and those situations will kind of, they change you. And so I won't judge you for being who you are if you don't judge me for being who I am. Because I have political beliefs, I have spiritual beliefs, I have beliefs about people and my own stereotype beliefs, but I'm always growing. And so, if I offend you, which I promise I will.
Oh, yeah.
I promise I will. Please come and talk to me. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is in private so that we can have a real honest discussion without either one of us losing faith.
Yes.
And so I have to say that because at the professional sports, when you go into a professional sports environment and you're playing and you're in basketball environment, I don't look like your typical basketball player. And so there's an automatic barrier there. Mm-hmm. When I was at IMG Academy, our football team was very heavily skewed towards a certain type of person, a certain type of player that I didn't look like.
Right.
And so I had to figure out a way to get them to know that they can trust me before I could teach them anything.
Yeah.
And that always comes with vulnerability.
Yeah.
As a coach, as a speaker, the more vulnerable you can be, the more open book you can be and be like, look, I'm not here. And I've never asked a professional athlete for their autograph. Yeah. That automatically puts you into the fan.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't want a selfie with you.
Yeah.
I don't want a testimonial from you. Nobody will know that you work with me. I work with a lot of Olympians. Nobody knows.
Right.
I don't put it on the website. Mm-hmm. I guess I kind of told people now, but you don't know who I'm working with.
Right.
But the only professional athletes that people know I work with is because they said, I work with James.
Mm-hmm.
And even then I tell them, let's just not do that. Because the older I get, the less I feel like I have to prove myself to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you go to my website, it's not very glamorous. There's a couple testimonials on there from some high school stuff. But when it comes to the professional aspect, there's an interesting thing about professional athletes. Can you help them right now? It doesn't matter what your educational background is, how many letters you have. But like, coach, if you can help me right now, I'll hire you.
Yeah.
And there's always, and when Michael Jordan hired, I'm forgetting his name right now, but he was basically like a strength coach and a mental coach, Tim Grover. When he hired Tim Grover, Tim was like, look, I'm not going to help you become better, but there's probably about 3-6% that you can improve on. And I'm going to work hard to find it, show it to you, and then you're going to get 3-6% better.
Yeah.
You're already the best basketball player right now. And that was pretty much how he won over Michael Jordan. And Michael Jordan paid him for years to not coach anybody else. And then finally, awesome. he let him open it for other people. And so my whole game plan when I'm working with athletes or business professionals or professional speakers is, let's find the little tiny areas that you can improve. Because I'm not going to make you that much better.
Mm-hmm.
But at the professional level, everybody is great.
Yes.
The best football team in the NFL and the worst football team have about the same amount of talent. It's not an issue of talent. It's an issue of the intangibles of like the leadership, the character of the team, the ability to work together. Do they love each other? Maybe that word love is just, it's so scary to a lot of teams, but it's not scary to Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks are doing just fine. It's not scary to Steve Kerr and the Warriors are doing just fine. And so you have these coaches that have embraced the word love.
Yeah.
And they've embraced teamwork and they've embraced the bench, making sure that they have a spot in it and embrace them as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And it works out great.
I think people think love and they think weakness for some reason, or like soft and just like it, like you have to be tough and you have to be, you know. To me, love is tough because it's telling you what you don't want to hear. It's telling you what you need to hear. You know, when you're as a mom, you know, that's what I do all the time with my kids. I'm like, I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to tell you what is going to benefit you, you know, and that's not always fun and gooey, but it's love. When you have a good relationship with somebody, when you find your wife, your spouse, you're gonna, love is not just about, you know, the, you know, kisses and huggies and, you know, all the, you know, ooey gooey, you know, romantic stuff, I guess is what people associate with. It's love is sacrifice, you know, and those are things that, people forget. And that's why these teams that have embraced that are doing so well, because they're not trying to be politically correct. They're trying to be real, authentic, and say, look, this is the thing. This is the deal. You know, this is what's missing. And people don't like that. But I think athletes, we function at a different place where we want to get better. So we do like that. And so when you come too soft, and so that's why they're thinking love is soft, maybe that's why it's.
Well, so I'm 39 now. I started coaching when I was 19. And so that's 20 years of coaching. Sixth grade to the professional level. And those sixth graders, when I first started coaching, are adults. And then I continue to coach sixth graders and eighth graders and sophomores. There's one thing I've noticed that's a constant that I've never seen it be untrue. One thing, when parents want to be their child's friend, they have a very difficult adult relationship with their children.
I agree.
I've never seen that wrong. So when I hear, and it's usually the mothers, they're like, oh, my kid's my best friend. I'm like, oh, enjoy it now. Enjoy it now, because that kid is going to resent the heck out of you for not loving them enough to say, no, you can't have that. Because it's just, I've seen it time and time again that the parents that are like, look, I'm not here to be your friend. We have an entire life to be friends. Mm-hmm. Once you move out of the house,
yes,
then we'll be friends. Until then, I'm going to raise you to be a great adult.
Exactly.
And you're going to hate me. You're going to think I'm a bully, but you're going to realize that I loved you more than anything in this world. And when you were out there and you thought I was being mean, I was in my room crying because it hurt so bad, because all I had to do was make a phone call to make your life a little bit easier. But if I had been the parent you wanted me to be, you wouldn't be the man or woman that you are today.
Totally agree. That is so good. That's golden. I'm going to take this section and put it on my Instagram. You are my heart, man. I tell you, cause that's what it's true. Like in the midst of it, I have said that to my kids, because it is so hard with social media and influences that are constantly, mm-hmm. See, like when you and I got in trouble when we were kids, we couldn't go to our phone or to, you know, anything. We just had to sit there and be like, this sucks, you know, where they have other influences. We're like, well, my parents would never do that. And so that kind of thing, you know, it makes it even harder to parent these days with that kind of stuff. And I just say, you know, I don't care. Those parents can say and do whatever they want with their son. I love you. And this is how it is, you know? So you got to just stand your ground. You know, my husband's a cop. In Plano, Texas. And he's a sergeant. So he's got, you know, people that he helps and you know, works with and kind of like a coach leadership, right? And I remember him coming home when he was just new to the office, being an officer. And my son was, you know, like 5 and 6, very strong-willed. And we, very strong-willed, redhead, very, very big. We knew he was going to be a big boy. So our discipline was really strong with him. We knew we had to. Anyways, so I won't bore you with all the details. But I remember one time him doing something and my husband had to spank him, you know, and he was just like, I'm not going to be getting a phone, having to call the cops when you're 13. Cause I can't control you because I didn't discipline you now, you know? And that always stuck with me. You know, I think that parents, like you said, want to be their friend and cause they love them, but it's the wrong kind of love. To me, love is sacrifice, and it's sacrificing that.
Well, it's transactional. I'm going to protect you so you don't feel any kind of pain so that I don't have to feel any kind of pain.
Yeah.
And then the kid is older and they don't have the tools to be an adult.
You don't.
If you're carrying your kid's bag at 10 years old, so you're emotionally stunting their growth.
I agree.
Like, and you know what? It's crazy to me.
I think it's my generation a lot. I see that in you know, and I take, it's hard to say, like I've seen it and grown up with my kids through it. And I've seen where my generation doesn't want our kids to suffer. And it's like, maybe because they suffered. I don't get it, but
it's something, I think it's a little different and it might be different to some people, but our generation, if you were born in the late 70s and the early 80s, we're known as the latchkey generation, right? Where we have babysitters because our parents wanted to work so hard because their parents were from the 60s and didn't work it, you know, and we're doing all this stuff. And they're like, I'm going to work. And so you see this pendulum, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got our grandparents, they worked their tail off. Our grandparents, they didn't work a whole lot because they were, you know, doing drugs and the sexual revolution, all that stuff. So then our parents were like, we're going to work. Mom and dad both had jobs a lot of times. And us would spend time in daycare and babysitting. And so then when we grow up, we're like, our kids, we're going to be there for our kids because our parents weren't there. And so now we're there, except now we're being called helicopter parents, yes, lawnmower parents. We're there so much. And I've never met an athlete that said, I'm really glad my parents come to every game and yell at the ref because it just makes me play so much better. Like, no kid ever says that. You ask the kids when they quit, let's talk about esports. The number one reason kids quit sports and play video games is because mom and dad aren't there going, try harder, get to the next level, go get that magic orb, cross the rainbow. They're like, they don't want to have anything to do with it. The kids are like, finally. And when I got hired by the Dallas Cowboys to work with the esports team that they purchased, I found out very quickly that these professional e-gamers, these professional gamers, some of them had played sports. All of them quit because of their parents. Mm. Not because it was hard, because they were just sick of being yelled at.
Yeah.
They were sick of refs and the refs that are still around. We don't keep refs very often or very long these days because we're so mean to them. We treat them as subhuman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even as adults, though. And so what we can't do is blame youth sports, because you can watch Barstool Sports on Instagram and you can see people yelling at refs and you can see people yelling at coaches. And you can see these are adults. Mm-hmm. The same argument when people are like, oh, all these kids are on their phones all day. Really? Go to a coffee shop. All the adults are on their phones too. Yeah. It's not just the kids. Mm-hmm. And the kids are going to learn the behavior. You remember when we were younger, there was that commercial. And it was like, this dad walks into the bedroom and he's like, where did you learn how to do these drugs? And he goes, from you, Dad. I learned it from watching you. You remember that commercial?
Yeah.
That was like, I remember that commercial from younger. And we're going on low power mode. I remember that commercial. And it's the same thing. Like, these kids are learning sideline behavior from their parents.
I don't get you, Dad.
I love technology.
We're back online.
This is so great. You know, this is so great. I'm glad I got you before you took off to head to do your new job, you know, because this recording wouldn't even happen. So I'll deal with technical difficulties all day long. And I'm glad that you're healthy now too. So we were talking about behaviors. I was going to tell you one of the best things that ever happened to me as a mom. My daughter was playing sand volleyball at the junior Olympic level. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Is it working? Okay, just making sure. We had to switch how we were recording, guys. So hopefully this is working. Just let me know if it stops, okay? she was playing at, you know, for the at the junior Olympic level, okay, sand volleyball. And at that level, you don't have coaches. I mean, you have coaches in practice, but you don't coach during the game, right? So it's self-coached. It's two-man, okay? And she was having a rough game. And I was saying everything that she was doing wrong. Okay, like, how is that helpful? It's not, right? So I'm sitting there and I'm like so hard on her because, you know, as a parent, when you're sitting there in that moment, you don't realize how you sound, okay? And so that's why I'm sharing this story. In my head, I'm thinking, I'm helping her, right? I'm not thinking, I'm a worst parent in the whole world and I'm not helping her at all. Right. And so I'm sitting there. And so a parent comes over to me, who is a friend of ours, and their daughter played with my daughter, and said, you know, she already knows that she's not playing at her best right now. And you're just pointing out everything she's doing wrong. And I was like, so grateful that parent had the courage to do that and tell me that. And that from that day forward, she was like 15 or 16 at the time. So she was really starting to get into that stage where it was really important for me to make sure that I was transitioning with her, you know, she's my oldest.
Yeah.
I had coached her since she was, like you said, sixth grade basketball was my favorite year with her. Since fourth grade, she started in sports at fourth grade, and that's when we realized she was talented. You know, we didn't know, you know, and basketball was her first love. Volleyball became it later, but it was her. She was an incredible basketball player. I think she regrets not playing it her senior year, but you know, it was one of those things going off to college. Anyways, so let me go back to my story. In that moment, I'm sitting there telling her everything as an athlete under that pressure anyways, right? they're already beating themselves up. They can't get out and move on to the next play because it's just a constant. And then I'm constantly reinforcing how terrible she is, right? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I like to call it, like I call it doing her homework. Like you were doing her homework. You were giving her the math answers, which means when you're not there, she's not going to be able to have this self-reflection of, oh, okay, where was my feet? So when I teach self-talk, which is a very important sports psychology foundation, I teach them, what kind of questions are you asking yourself? And so if an athlete is asking themselves, let's say they're playing soccer and they miss the goal, and the question that they ask in their head, because we talk in questions in our head, is why do I suck? Why am I horrible? Mm-hmm. Well, those are very bad questions because the answer, you're not going to really want to know the answer. Oh, you suck because you're short. You suck because you're ugly. Well, we speak to ourselves so bad.
It's so bad.
So what I teach is ask better questions. Where was my foot placement? Where was my head pointed? Because those are things that you can fix. Mm-hmm. So if we could go back to that situation where you were giving her positive advice and she was receiving it as womp, 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 or you're not good enough, you're not good enough, play better, you're not good enough. That's what she hears.
Oh, yeah.
When parents coach from the sideline, all they hear is you're not playing good enough for me.
Yeah, you suck.
I paid money to be entertained. You're not entertaining me.
Yep.
So we're going to have a talking to on the way home.
Yep.
Which the worst part of youth sports is the car ride home.
It is.
The parent that wants to talk to their kid. Mm-hmm. Shut your mouth and let the kid sulk because they know they played bad. Mm-hmm. Or go to ice cream. Who cares? Let's go have some fun. But you ask them, you tell them, okay, let's replace those, why do I suck? Why am I ugly? Let's replace those with, where was my foot placement? Mm-hmm. You know, was it a good pass? Was it a pass that I could have done something with? Do you have these better questions where they're objective? You'd be like, oh, your foot was in the wrong spot, or your hip was placed wrong, or you hit the ball on the net. Okay, so now you're hitting the ball, like some volleyball, you're hitting the ball too top heavy. Maybe you need to get underneath a little bit more, or your hand wasn't like
you're late, time, or, yeah.
Right? You're leaning over, or I got a penalty. Okay, well, you broke the rules. Like, let's not blame the ref for calling a holding call. Let's talk about you being unable to handle this guy.
Right.
Which is, you know, like sometimes someone's just better than you. We live in a society where it's like you can't just be beat by somebody.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm playing basketball against Shaquille O'Neal, my head comes to his waist.
You're going to get beat.
So I'm going to get beat. And so if someone's like, I can't believe you lost Shaquille O'Neal. I'm like, really? Have you seen him? You know? And you have all these parents who have these unrealistic expectations. Now, when I went to IMG Academy, and I saw these high school football players, and a lot of them aren't going to make it in college for 4 years, and most of them won't play in the NFL. And you're going to tell me that your kid is going to play in the NFL? They can't. And they're playing freshmen on the freshman team. They're not even getting pulled up right now. Like, let's have some realistic expectations.
Yeah.
Maybe your kid is playing sport because they just want to play the sport.
Right.
Why are we always looking forward to the college education?
Yep.
Which is always, the math never works out. Let's take soccer, for example. There's 11 spots on the college sport team. Most of them aren't on scholarship because soccer isn't valued as a sport as much as other sports are.
Heard that a lot.
And when you get to the college, there might be not be any scholarships left. So the tens of thousands of dollars and the entire childhood that you wasted in order to get a college education, your kid gets there and goes, I don't want to play soccer anymore.
Yep.
I want to know what it's like to wake up on a Saturday morning and not have to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to play sports anymore. You know how many kids at IMG don't go on to play sports in college?
Oh, tons because of that. Or the Little League stuff. The Little League stuff that you see on TV, you know, the one that the World Series, like Little League ones, you know, I'm probably saying the wrong terminology. Hardly any of those kids. Yeah, hardly any of those kids go to the next level. Why do you think that is? But I'll tell you, the reason why I told you the story is because it was the best thing that happened to me because it made me a better coach. It made me, you know, because I was like, I was able to see myself for what I was. And sometimes we don't see it. That's why I wanted to have you on. Someone who's listening to this might go, oh my gosh, I'm doing that. I didn't even know I was doing it. Like when my daughter was in middle school and she was the point guard of the basketball team, you know, it's seventh grade, and my husband would come in there and start coaching her from the sidelines. We coached her all the way up, right? And she would shut down. She would literally shut down. So I had to have a conversation with my husband. I was like, listen, I'm not gonna let you come to the games. You're gonna get in the hallway. You know, you're shutting her down. But that's the thing, is that, and that's why I'm so passionate about talking about this topic, because it's not coming from a bad place. My husband's not coming in there going, I just wanna be mean to my kid today. But that's like what you said, their self-talk when they're in that moment, it makes it worse, you know? Yeah, they're messing up. They're a kid, and they're gonna mess up, and they're gonna correct it. And so we always had we had some friends of ours that would come to every game, and we were hard on our kids in every area, not just sports. Okay, we just expected a lot, and I don't think that's a bad thing. And so they would always joke. They would, like, if something happened, it was always our kids' fault. Like it could be the other team traveled with the ball or something. Oh, that was Alex's fault. That was my oldest daughter, you know? So he would always say that just to keep levity, you know, in the group. But it's true. It's like, we just need to be more aware of how it's coming across. You know, if I could go back. Do what?
No kid makes a mistake on purpose.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
and that's what I'm saying, though.
The ball to the net, it's like, why'd you do that? Like, I didn't try that. Like, I know the point is to get it over there, and I hit it into the net. Like, I don't know that we have these expectations for our kids to be so perfect. Mm-hmm. We forget that we messed up a ton.
Oh, a ton.
Like, I had a lot of air balls playing basketball. I was a terrible basketball player. Sometimes I made it. And I wasn't trying to miss, like, hey, watch me miss the backboard. Like, I wasn't trying to do that. But, you know, and also my dad wasn't there being like, wow, you missed a lot of shots today. You want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't. Because my friends are going to make fun of me tomorrow at school. I don't need you to say anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think there's a healthy balance, though, I will say, James. There's a healthy balance between rah-rah, sis, goomba all the time and pointing out all the negatives. So what is your best advice? Because, you know, it seems like these days that's the extreme. You've got parents over here that are like so hard on their kid that their kid's going to hate everything about the sport in a year or two. And because I've trained those kids. I've had parents come to me, especially in this area. They're like, they'll pay me so much money to, like, I had this one client that paid me so much money to get their kid better, right? And every time I was with that kid, it wasn't about jumping higher, faster, moving, you know, any of this physical stuff, right? It was all about the mental and me trying to help coach them how to talk to their parent, like, because they didn't even want to be there. You know what I'm saying? And so.
You ever see Cesar Millan?
Yes.
The dog whisperer?
Yes.
He's not talking. There's nothing wrong with the dog.
I know.
The dog owner.
Yeah. And so, yes. And so it was.
Nothing wrong with the kid. It's the owner of the kid.
Well, and you know what's interesting is when this one certain particular situation that I had to tell the parent, your kid doesn't want to do this anymore. That's a hard, like, because I'm losing my job saying that to them, right? You know, I'm losing in sense, you know, if you think about it, right?
But what's being a child?
Yes, it's like, okay, you don't understand right now, like, and they were pissed at me. They were mad at me, but later on, they came back and they go, now we see what you're trying to tell us, you know. But I knew at the time they weren't going to be able to do what?
Before even ask their kid, do you want to play?
Right.
And then we put them in these situations where it's like, what do you mean you want to quit soccer? We paid for the entire year.
Yes.
Well, that's your fault. You should have paid for the whole year because there should be an end to it. And when there's an end to it, I can appreciate it because I miss it. And then I can't wait to get back to it.
Right, I agree with that.
Once you have a club sport coach who makes all of their money through club sport memberships, they're no longer someone you should ask advice about.
Yeah, it's so true.
Because they're going to promise you all these scouts are going to these tournaments. No, they're not. There's too many of them. There's not enough coaches to go around scouting all these others. No scholarships being handed out at a youth sport event.
It's certain sports you do kind of have to.
Right, but when they get found out, those coaches get fired. You're not supposed, even, I know girls soccer, you're supposed to be able to talk to these eighth graders or whatever. But what is that teaching them?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I just meant like, once you get to your junior, senior year.
I'm not talking about high school.
Oh, okay.
I understand that. I'm talking about youth sports.
Yeah.
I'm talking about all these tournaments. In the sophomore year, absolutely, there are scouts there.
Yeah.
But before then, your kids should be playing as many sports as possible because there's no such thing as a baseball family. Your kid might be a basketball player or a track star.
Yeah.
Or a wrestler. And if you're going to handicap him or her just because you have a preference for what sport that you want to watch on the weekends,
right?
You're the problem.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. My husband played baseball all through college, and my son played baseball and loved it. And when he his sophomore year, when he realized he was going to really put more energy into football, it was like we told him all the way going up, you don't have to play baseball. I love it. Okay, then play it, you know. And nowadays, the way it is, you know, the baseball coach at this school we're at now was like, look, man, you're wanting to play football at the next level. So as a junior, this is when he quit. You know, he played up until then.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, he gave him good advice. He said, listen, you can come and you can be on this team, but you're going to hurt yourself in spring football. We're in the, you know, so it was, you know.
That's actually a year I tell people they should specialize.
Yeah. I think we're doing it too early. I agree with you totally. All my kids played every sport up until junior, senior year. And track is one of those sports that I think every athlete should play because of the mental toughness that you have to, it's just you in that line and people like the mental toughness that you have to do a race or anything in track. Cause it's a lot individual. Even if you're on the relay team, you know, you still got to start it off.
I think that argument can be made for any individual sport.
I agree.
Tennis, even golf, any team sport athlete could learn a lot from an individual sport because now they can't rely on other people.
Right. Well, a lot of coaches tell my son that he has some of the best footwork they've ever seen for football because he didn't just play football. He was a pitcher. He was first baseman. He was basketball. He was a point guard. He was a base guy or whatever that, you know, three and four, they change it up all the time, whatever.
That's the most obvious thing to me that parents just ignore.
Yeah.
I've spoken to many, many college recruiters, head coaches at the best universities in America. They are all looking for multi-sport athletes.
Hey, give me some of the, hey, hook me up. Toby Jr., his name is Toby Martino. I'm just messing with you, man. I'm teasing, but you're right.
I've spoken, and when I was at, you know, I was in Florida, those guys and girls would come through, and they were looking for, I know you play this sport. What else did you play? And even IMG gets a bad rap. They're like, oh, you know, you're single-sport athletes. Like, most of them came as multi-sport athletes to focus on that one sport. Very rarely is someone coming in from basketball or from football or from baseball that haven't played any other sports.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, if you've played baseball, nothing but baseball, up to your senior year of high school, and you go into college, what else can you learn?
Yeah.
And I've heard coaches say that. I got nothing else to teach this person. And then they're so focused right here. If adversity comes, there's no improv. There's no, oh, I learned this other skill in basketball or in track or whatever. It just, any sport that can take you away from your primary sport is going to make your primary sport better.
Yeah, I agree.
Like a soccer player who plays hockey. Now they have three sticks because they know how to use their 2 feet.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, the transfer of skills can be in any sport. And coaches at the college level are looking for that.
Yes, they are. Thank you for saying that. So talk to my dads that have kids that are in sports. And what's your best advice? I mean, we've gone over a lot of it. And I think most of it is just let them go through pain. But what's one of the one or two things that you can leave with them that will, when, how to coach them better? In the home and from the sidelines, I guess. Is that too complicated of a question?
Well, the best advice I'd give them is not to coach them.
Yeah.
You know, the best athletes out there, the LeBron Jameses, the Tom Brady, like all these huge athletes don't coach their kids and refuse to. And I think that's the best advice. And so if you have to coach, because my dad showed up to a baseball practice and then one day was my coach. And he was just like, I don't want to do this, but I'm your coach. And he was terrible. But there was nobody else. And so you got asked to do it and there was nobody else to do it. There's two things. Number one, one day I was coaching football and one of my athletes was like, look, my mom's on drugs. I need a place to stay. And I was like, done. Come home with me. So he was able to come home with me, stay with me for a while. And very quickly I realized that at home I was still coach. Mm. And so I needed to address that. And so when we got to practice that day, I said, hey, is there anything else that you want to tell Mr. Leaf? Because Coach Leaf is about to show up. And he was like, what? And I go, when I put my hat on, I'm your coach. And Mr. Leaf is gone mm-hmm. until after practice. And he was like, okay, no, I'm good. And as soon as I put the hat on, I was like, how was your day? What's going on? You ready for practice? And he kind of saw it. Then after practice, as we're walking to the car, I was like, Daylon, you have anything you want to tell Coach? He's like, no, I'm good. Took my hat off and I was like, how was practice? And he was like, oh, Coach was a jerk. Just like, you know, trying to like test it. And I was like, tell me about it. He's like, no, practice was good. And we didn't talk about football. And so having that break of I'm your coach at coach or at practice and at home, we're not going to talk about it unless you bring it up.
Right.
And we can talk to you about it, not as coach. We're not going to talk about starting lineups. You know, if you want to go play catch or whatever. But I'm dad. I'm mom. And you'll find that your kid will actually want to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
They'll bring it up when they want to talk about it. And when you want to talk about it is irrelevant because it's not your experience. It's the kid's experience.
Yeah.
And so you have to remind yourself that. That's the first story. The second story, I was in Starbucks and I watched this mom. She's got a hot chocolate in one hand and she's got a mocha in the other. And her kid's trying to zip up his jacket. And she's standing there by the door just waiting. And I could tell they need to be out of there, but they're just waiting. And he's like, I can't do it. She's like, try again. And he's trying to zip up his zipper and I can't. And he starts like, I see a little tear come down. And I'm like, this is the best parenting I've ever seen. Because she's just standing there. She can put both of them down,
yeah. Do
it, and then leave. But she just holds this coffee in that hot chocolate. And then finally when the kid does it, and zip, tears go away. She's like, Mommy, I did it. She's like, yeah, you did, champ. Let's go.
Yeah.
And they left. Now that kid's probably not going to remember that story. But it's probably not the only time she's going to let him have some self-efficacy and learn that he can do it. Then it's going to be a little difficult, but that when he does it, that look of jubilee.
Yeah.
Just imagine your kids and they achieve something and they look at you. Mm-hmm. We rob ourselves.
We do.
Now, I'm not a parent, but we rob ourselves mm-hmm. of the joy of our kids achieving things.
I agree.
By taking away those opportunities and zipping up their jacket.
Right.
Instead of waiting 30 seconds, which is nothing in the grand scheme of things. But we get so caught up in like, oh, I've got to check my fantasy scores. So we got to get to the car. And I got to do this. And I got to do that. It's like, just hold up. Let them struggle. Let them have a bad game. Let them have a bad season. When my dad coached baseball, we went defeated. We didn't win a game all season.
You probably learned the most that season.
Next year he goes, do you want me to coach again? And he had the brains to ask me that and the courage because I said, no, you're terrible. I don't want you to coach again, but I want you to come to my games.
Yeah.
And he'd come to my games and I hear him from the sideline. Yeah, Jimmy! That's all I would hear. He never coached me.
Yeah.
He never gave me advice. I didn't need it because I had coaches.
Right.
And even when my coaches were terrible, which I had my share, my dad was just like, do you want to talk about it or no? I'm like, no. Okay. Let's figure it out.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, though, that we have done, and I think it does help, is not to jump on the bandwagon. What I mean by that is like when kids come home frustrated, you know, and they want to just bash a coach, they know, my kids know, because we've taught them from very young, you don't get to do that. you know, okay, so this, they get to vent, they get to say all those things, but I'm not going to sit there. And what I think a lot of parents do is they say, yeah, right, he is a jerk. Yeah, right, he is, like, who does he think he is? Like, that's what parents do because they want to, you know, they want to go along with their kid. But we always go, well, why do you think that, why do you think they were doing that? Do they just want to be a jerk? I mean, really? Or are they trying to make you better? You know? And so like things like that, I do think helps in the home to support. These kids are with these coaches more than they're in the classroom half sometimes, right?
But it's also a problem solving situation, which we rob our kids of problem solving and then wonder why they can't
deal.
Come up with them later. So in that situation, you can be like, your coach is a jerk. All right, I'll accept that. But what does he or she do good? Let's do a one for one. Mm-hmm. You get one diss and then give me something good. Because if he's all bad or she's all terrible, well, then she can't coach him. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case because she's
usually not
25 years. So my encouragement is to do a one for one. But what's also beautiful about that is it creates an opportunity for you to grow in your relationship with your child.
I agree.
Because now you're having a conversation. And it's not just a diss session.
Yeah.
Let's just all just, yeah, he's terrible. Well, she
how does it
know
help?
Well,
how are you helping your kid? You're not. You're making it worse. You're making it worse for them because then they come in with that.
And show them it's okay.
Yeah.
Because that behavior will be now, let's talk about the terrible teacher.
Yep.
Let's talk about the terrible boss. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the terrible CEO.
Yep.
And then you just focus on all this negativity. And that's why nowadays gratitude is such a big deal. And everybody's jumping on the gratitude bandwagon because they haven't been taught to appreciate the good things that are happening around them.
Yeah, and so everyone's a victim.
You focus on the negative, it's like watering the plant.
Yeah.
You're watering the negativity tree, and of course it's gonna grow with negativity.
Right.
Go and let's search for the positive.
Yeah.
You don't have to be crazy and be like everything's great and there's no weeds and there's flowers everywhere. No, sometimes things suck.
It does.
But there's some good mm-hmm. in that terribleness.
It's like, what are we going to learn from this? You know, my sophomore year was the hardest year ever for him. Right. And I told him, you know, every day he was like, I'm going to quit. And I said, you'll make that decision when you're not emotional, you know? So, I mean, like, but he had to grow. He needed that to grow because he did now as a senior, he's playing both sides of the ball and things are really, really good. And so last night he came in on cloud nine, and because the coaches are finally letting him play defense. He's always been wanting to play defense, but he sacrificed because the coach was like, I need you on offense. I need you to play left tackle. And then last year and then this year is center. He was like, oh, I just want to play deep because he's really good at defense, but they really needed that on the line. And so he was like, okay, finally, after the last game, he was like, let him play defense. And then in last night's practice, he was telling him, he came home on cloud nine. He's like, they're going to give me even more reps and more reps, you know, and on defense. And I said, why do you think that is some work that you're in this place? You know, and we took him back. We were like, remember all this? This all prepared you to be strong enough to handle. Like, most coaches at the 5A level will not let an O lineman play nose guard. They won't. And the coach wasn't letting him. And he said to the coach, because the coach said, you're going to get hurt and I need you as my center. And he said, if we play in fear, we're never going to win. He's like, you got to play me. You know, you got to play me. So he fought for it. But all those things that he went through, James, I know, got him to that level where he could have that confidence in that conversation and know that he was able to fight for himself in that way. If we had just swooped in and made it easy for him, I don't think he'd be in the place that he's at today. And I mean, he's got a lot more trials coming. Trust me. I know it's not over.
The stakes are higher the older we get.
Right.
And when we're kids and we have to have those awkward conversations, we feel like it's the end of the world because we don't have experience. And it's not a one for one. It's not, if we let our kids struggle at those younger ages, they struggle better. Mm-hmm. Ray Dalio in his book Principles talks about his definition for success. Struggle well.
Mm-hmm.
That's his definition.
That's awesome.
You know, and Pastor Keith said that a couple weeks ago too.
Yeah.
And that the definition is, if you can struggle well, that's success. And it has nothing to do with the scoreboard. It has nothing to do with money in the bank or, you know, people. It's everything with, like, can I go through trials and tribulations and find the good and become better and use that as my story? Because at the end of the football season, every team ends with a loss except one. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that those teams suck. I hate it. Hate it. I don't hate very many things, but I hate when I hear a sports program talk about how, yeah, we weren't that successful this year. You know, we only made it to the third round of playoffs. What? You made it to the third round and you weren't successful? What's wrong with you? Yeah. That is success. Well, you know, we were supposed to win it all. Okay, so let's just paint the season a success because, you know, you had the ball rolled a long way.
Yeah.
And just let put you out of the game. Like the Saints last year, they had a terrible call at the end of their last game, and it was obvious to everybody except the refs. They didn't go to the Super Bowl because of it. Are they not successful?
Right.
Because of that one bad call? They were uber successful.
Right.
It just happened to end at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's good. I think we learn more when we lose. You know?
Absolutely. It's absolutely. Yeah. And as adults, we need to become better storytellers about how to interpret the meaning of the losses. Mm-hmm. When I'm coaching, I coached a team and we played a football game or a football season. We lost every game that season. We had to redefine what success was. Mm-hmm. Because we were just in the wrong division. Everybody was bigger. Like realistically, we were not going to win. So now I need to figure out, okay, what's success? And how do I keep these kids engaged? Because the other teams are just more advanced than they are.
Yeah. That was successful. That right there. Because that's what
but
you...
The next year, these are sixth graders. The next year, they didn't move them into a different division. And those seventh graders demolished the other team.
See, it paid off.
At the banquet, I was like, at the end of the season, we lost every game. I'm like, who's going to play next year? Every kid stood up, and I was like, okay, let's go. And I got to watch on the sideline, and they were the same kids with the same talent, but they had way different hearts, and they destroyed teams. Mm-hmm. They didn't grow very much. They were still outmatched, but they didn't lose.
Mm-hmm. Heart will win. Oh, gosh. Heart and hustle will win, will beat talent any day. I've seen it. I've watched it. We just had a game last week that happened. I was like, wow, but that happens through adversity. That happens through, you know, having pain. That doesn't happen without pain. And, you know, you can't, y'all, if you hear anything today, let your kids suffer some. And it sucks. And it's not easy, but it's so worth it in the end. It's so worth it, you know, as long as it's not abusive. I have to say that because I know there are some situations where you do have to step in as a parent. They're very far and few and in between, but there are some, unfortunately, you know, so yeah. I don't want to just paint like every picture that you should support every coach. I think it's not supportive enough. I don't think we support coaches enough, but you know, there are situations where it's unhealthy. So have some discernment, I guess, on that, right? Oh, are you frozen? That must be a reason why we need to end our, I can't even hear you. So, okay, so we're back, even with technical difficulties. So, okay, so James, I've taken enough of your time. I appreciate you so much. I love your energy. And can I tell you how much I appreciate you speaking into the lives of our youth and even professional athletes, but for all these years that you've done that, you've made such a difference and impacted the world in such a great way. And so I just want to, you know, just encourage you in that and just know that truly is a ministry. And and I don't take it lightly that you took the time to talk to me and my listeners. I want to honor you for that. And I just appreciate you for being an amazing coach and for just loving people. And that means teaching them things to persevere and to, you know, that it's okay when it's for things to suck and to persevere through it, you know. Mm-hmm. I wish my daughter and my son both could have been coached by you. So you're called Unleash the Athlete, which is amazing, you know. How do people get in touch with you? Like if they heard this and they're like, okay, I got to get to know this guy, you know, like, what's your next thing? Oh, and also I want to know what are you doing next? You know, what's your next teaching? I think you're going overseas or something. Like, what are you doing?
I got a lot of things going on, but so the best place is jamesleath.com. And my last name is Leath, L-E-A-T-H. That's kind of the hub. You can find everything there. The thing I'm most excited about that I've just recently started telling people about is as a coach, you need a coach, right? Like you're a coach, but you have a coach. Mm-hmm. I'm a coach. I've got a couple coaches. And what I've found is that high school and collegiate athletes are looking for the things that I teach. Yeah. So I'm actually starting up an athlete mastermind. And I'm really excited about it. I just started talking about it a couple days ago, but I've been planning it for about 6 months. How it goes is I do a live teaching for 2 hours on the first Sunday of every month. And then I do office hours during the second week of the month where kids, you know, athletes can come in and they can ask questions amongst their peers.
Wow.
And it's very private. And it's super cheap. We haven't landed on a number yet, but it's going to be less than $50 a month. And that's, they get their own mental coach, which is me, and I'm very accessible. And when I do the live coaching, it'll be in a boardroom where I'll actually have a team in there. And then also my buddy will be on the digital stuff and answering questions. And so it's going to be, no one else is doing it for athletes. Yeah. And so I'm very excited about that. Yeah. That's starting soon. So if you're interested in that, you're going to want to go to jameslee.com or utathlete.com, which is my website for my business. I'm really accessible on Twitter, on Instagram. My name is just my handle. I don't have a cool Jamar handle. How's that going for transition? Transition's going okay?
Transitions are always fun. Jamar Solutions is, you know, it's fun. We're doing good. And
so those are my big things with the Athlete Mastermind. There's a lot of courses that are going to be released very soon. There's a lot of coaching courses. I do a lot of teaming with other people. So
you have coaching courses? Is that what you said?
I have one coaching course. It's called Team Building Activities for Athletes.
Okay.
And it's just my background of doing all these activities. It started as 52 activities. I think we're at 68 or maybe 70 activities. Because once you buy the course, I just keep adding to it.
That's awesome.
And so the coaches get all that new stuff. And it's improv. It's drinking games from college that I've used in practices to kind of reset their mind. But it makes practice fun. Also activities to get the kids to share, to build culture.
Mm-hmm. Trust.
Things I'm excited about.
Trust.
Yes.
You know, that's what I tell people all the time when they say they want to get involved in like becoming a, you know, a trainer or coaching people or whatever. And you've got to have trust, you know,
yeah.
You got to build that culture.
And then the Athlete Mastermind, there's also going to be an addition to it where coaches can participate They can get all the lessons that I'm teaching and then go teach their athletes. And
that's
so
awesome.
I feel like I've been called to empower and educate and encourage coaches. Okay. To go out there and be the best version of themselves they can, because these kids are going to grow up to want to be like their coach.
Yeah. I'm the person I am because of coaches. Yeah, I totally agree. It's very impactful. So that's good. I mean, I can pass that on. I have a lot of coaches that I work with. And so that can use that.
Great.
Cause they know cause they're coaches. They know how important it is to.
Well, what they don't have is the time to go out and do the research, to go out and find where are the time tested activities, what are the time tested lessons. And so what I bring to the table is I'm out there doing the research, meeting with different coaches. And yesterday I was at an professional ultimate frisbee practice, because the coach was like, how do I make this more efficient? And I had 2.5 pages of notes, and this guy's been coaching for a long time. And I was just like, there's so much waste of time. Here's this and here's that and here's this. And I mean, it was just such a blessing to be able to do that. And, you know, I can't wait to see his next practice.
That's awesome. And that is a blessing. Thank you for saying that. It's a blessing to be able to do what you're passionate about, because God put that in you. Let's be clear. You know, that's, if you've got gifting, it's from above, you know, and since we're believers, we can talk about that. And how do you honor that? You honor it by blessing others with it, you know? So thank you for blessing my life today. And thank you for coming on. And I know it's exciting times for you. I mean, it's so exciting. And I see us together someday doing something. I don't know. Cause I think our energy is very similar. I got age on you, but that's it. You know, our energy is right. You know, it's like our pastor, his energy is like insane. Like I've never been around anybody that can keep up with me, and that man would probably pass me up.
Yeah, come on, let's go.
Come on.
Get around this corner.
Oh, I just love him. And I appreciate you. And so thank you so much. So we got all the information that we need to leave on. I'm going to be putting your info in the show notes.
Yes. I'll send you all the links and stuff. I'll help you out.
I didn't know you were on Twitter. My son is on Twitter. I'm going to have him follow you because he was so excited to hear that I was going to have you on, So that's cool.
If I can do anything to serve, let me know, give him my phone number and I'd love to talk to
you. Oh, that's really sweet. I just thank you. See your heart. I love your heart. Thank you. All right. Well, that's it. Let's wrap it up so that you can actually go do what you need to do charge your phone and spend some time with your friend, which is awesome. And we'll be in touch,
Absolutely.
All right. So bye for now.
Bye for now.
This podcast is awesome. Share it with your friends. Share it with family, share it with athletes, share it with people so they just get it. It's about culture, community, building character. It's not always about wins and losses, and how to empower your kids and when they're in the struggle. It's okay for them to feel pain.